This episode of Football 301, we have a very average show for you. I'm kidding. It's a great show, but we're doing the all average football team for 2026. Matt Harmon joins me as we go position by position and nominate our most average player for 2026 in the NFL. Very fun show. Love getting to do this. See you guys soon. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Very fun show for you guys today. I guess a very average show for you guys today, but that's just the topic. That's not hopefully your rating or assessment of this show. We are going to do, but I like this. We did it for the first time last year, but an all average team for the 2026 season. I'll get into more details of what that is in a sec, but let's get to my co-host for this all average show, who is not average in any sense of the word. He's great, actually. And he's my good friend. That's Mr. Matt Harmon. How you doing, Matt?
I'm good, man. Yeah. I can't promise it's going to be the best show, but it won't be the worst, which, you know, it's going to be passable, just like these guys, right? Like just like these guys. Not going to be the best, not going to be the worst. I will say, when we get into the defining the terms thing, I do think we kind of need a reckoning on what the word average means. Especially I would say in today's lingo, people's like, well, this is mid. I mean, if you're saying something is mid, that's actually not technically an insult, or something is average. It's not technically an insult. It's just, you know, it's not bad. We're actually truly saying it's not bad. It's just not the best, right? It's in the middle.
And I think that freaks people out. It sticks with me to this day that Netflix changed their rating system because they said people, they only did thumbs up, thumbs down. I think they do thumbs middle now or whatever. Or two thumbs up and a thumbs up and a thumbs down. I think they did is because they realized everyone just goes fives and zeros. So why have one, two, three, four? So we'll just get, everyone's going to go the highest or the lowest. But I actually think, and if you look at the bell curve of the NFL, is that there's a big glut in the middle there. And there's the exceptional players. There's the very good. There's the good. There's the above average. And then today we're going to talk about the average. And actually, if I even want to get into like my old history, when I, in a grading scale that I was taught, and there was some correlation to what baseball does, where they do a 2 through 8 scale or 20 through 80 scale, where 80 is the top of the scale, that's the best player you've ever seen in that skill set or that player overall. 70 is what they call plus plus, which in my terms is excellent, very, very good. And then 60 is plus, which in my terms, again, is good, firmly good. Like that's like Pro Bowl level-ish. And then it goes 50, which is above average, and then 40 is average. And in football, when I was with the Falcons, you know, they used the Patriots system. They kind of translated it. I think they got it from Cleveland, the team formerly known as the Indians, is that they, when they were going through that scale and getting that scale, they try to translate for football terms. And when I got it taught to me, and they're like, I was like, okay, well, this guy's an average. He's a four. And everyone goes, well, no, that's really more of a five. That's above average for the NFL. And I go, well, don't. Is it average for the NFL or is it average for a like prospect? And there's so much translation that needs to be done because you're just like, well, is it average for the league or is it just average for a prospect? And then they couldn't even, they were like, and this is where kind of the art of scouting comes in and how, what your thresholds are for each one. And that's what I had to translate in my head. I'm like, okay, so above average is good then. And they're like, no, we're chasing sixes. We're chasing good. And then that's always stuck with me. It's like, you're chasing good. Because if you settle for average, that's not the best thing that you want. And so maybe as I've looked at this, and even Stone put a nice note in, he's like, it's not going to tank your roster. It's not going to elevate it. In baseball, they have a WAR of exactly zero. Their replacement level, maybe a average level, WAA, as they call it in baseball. It's that if you had to, based off this team, and I think the tight end, my candidate for a tight end is a perfect example of this, you're always looking for somebody better, but you're okay if that guy's your starter. Is that maybe the best way if I looked at it? Like, you're okay with that guy playing, but you're always looking for maybe someone a little better. But that's how I've kind of looked at it. And some of these positions, I think, especially the positions you got, it's kind of a harder conversation because there's so many valid players that could play those spots. So I think it's a fun conversation because it's just, we always look at top 10s, and I love looking at top 10s, the best of the best. And you don't want to get negative and look at the worst of the worst. But sometimes, what's that glut in the middle of that bell curve? What's the top of the bell curve look like? Not the overachievers, the excellent guys, just the average. So I think it's a pretty fun exercise to do. So I'm kind of glad we get to do it every year now, or 2 years in a row, I should say.
Yeah, 2 years running. I do like the idea of, hey, if your guy is worse than this, you've got a problem. If he's better than this, you're going in the right direction. So I think that kind of helps set a barometer of like the utility of it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll just get into it. And this is kind of the hardest one. Actually, that's a lie. I will get into one of the hardest ones, but that's for different reasons. But get into quarterbacks. And I know every quarterback is either awesome or they suck. or every quarterback I overrate and defend and make excuses for, or I don't give enough credit for. It's the royal eye, the national media, the us analysts that we kind of when we talk about these guys. So average, I think, freaks people out when talking about the quarterbacks because everyone's a special little boy. But actually, I think this guy is kind of perfect when you're summing up average. Because also when I get into quarterbacks is that I'll say the guy first and then I'll get into my explanation. Jacoby Brissett. I think he is the ideal average quarterback because if he is your backup, you're great. And then if he's your spot starter, you can get through with it. Is he your full-term starter? I'm trying to draft the guy and look into free agency and maybe get someone better. And if you even look at this, I did a little exercise and I was looking through, I didn't just look at starters. I was like, how many quarterbacks would I consider real right now? And this is so arbitrary and just my own assessment and just me doing it in 10 minutes while I was in the bathroom, is that I counted about 48 to 50 quote unquote real quarterbacks in the NFL right now, meaning they have a pulse and wouldn't embarrass themselves if they had a trot out on the field, which I actually think might be a record, by the way.
Yeah.
But I'm saying guys that can go out there and just get you through a game. I would count about 48. So average quarterback, I guess if you looked including high-end backups or backups, so that's like 24th, 25th, 26th, somewhere around there. That's Jacoby Brissett to me. So I just think he can get you through games. He can do enough. He can lead you to a Looney Tunes offense, as you like to put it, like he did last year where they're trailing. He can hold the offense. He's had some moments where he's had some good seasons, like the Brown season when he started. But he is kind of ideally quarterback 25. I would always put him 26. That's Jacoby Brissett. And then we can get into other guys too. But any thoughts on the quarterback kind of position for maybe who else you maybe consider average or maybe even just Brissett?
Well, I don't know if I'm pulling back the curtain here to say that we are pre-taping this episode rather early.
I meant to disclaim that, so thank you. It's like you host shows 20 times a week.
Maybe. Worth noting we are pre-taping this one, but as of the time I am saying this in the real moment of planet Earth time, the only player that I believe that we are going to discuss here that is actively in a contract dispute with with his current team.
Hey, he's a great guy, but he understands leverage. Oh. He's like, I'm the starter.
Listen.
Okay.
I need a little bit more money than that. You guys said it. You guys told me. It is what it is. But
your words, not mine.
So I believe he is the only player we'll talk about on the list that is, again, in an active contract dispute, which, when you're the Arizona Cardinals and this is the average team, probably not the place you want to be in. But that's kind of the point of Jacoby Brissett, where I think you said this perfectly, that he can go out there and just like get you through a stretch, if not an entire season, which is, I think, where the Cardinals are right now. You've called it the tank commander position at quarterback, and I think that's perfectly fine. And obviously as a receiver guy, I like wanting to see production for these players, I don't mind this level of quarterback being out there, because like we saw the fantasy scam last year for Trey McBride and Michael Wilson. Unfortunately, Marvin Harrison Jr. was hurt for the vast majority of it. I would, obviously just going back and working on Harrison recently, it's like I forgot like how just the brutal the injury luck for him was last year, that he just did not get to overlap really with Jacoby Brissett at all. Hopefully we'll see more of that this year in what I think is going to be a better designed offense. But he's the perfect barometer of like you're going to be able to see what the scheme is and like what the desires are. That was sort of the problem that the former offense ran into with Kyler Murray all the time, is that you just didn't get to see, because the vision, and this isn't like an anti-Kyler or like Jacoby Brissett's better. Obviously, this is ancient history at this point, but he just didn't really bring that offense to life in the way that I think Drew Petzing probably wanted it to be. And I do think that Mike LaFleur looks at Jacoby Brissett and says like, this guy can get us through a season. It's not going to be good, but it's not going to be atrocious. It's going to be average, and it's going to just kind of get us through this stretch, and you'll be at least able to see like what the intentions of my offense are as we go into what's hopefully a longer term and successful rebuild. So I think he's perfect for this. Quarterback, I was not I was not jealous essentially that you drew quarterback, because it's really emblematic of the tough part of this list, which is like, are we talking about average starters? Are we talking
about
as you laid out, like entire league? Okay, yeah, there's 45, 50 guys. He probably falls in the middle of that. That's difficult for all of these positions, but obviously with quarterback, because it's a hot stove issue, I was kind of glad to see that you drew this one.
Yeah, it was because my first answer was Tyler Shuck, and because I was just thinking of the 32 starters as we, again, like you said, as we're recording this in June. And I was like, okay, those are the 32 stars. And to me, he finished just below QBR of 50. And last year, that would have ranked, his QBR was, I think it was like 48 or 49, and he ranked 24th. And then his teammate, Spencer Rattler, ranked 23rd, and his was like right at 50. And QBR is just one stat. All the advanced stats have issues and everything, but I just kind of look at, so everyone can look up QBR. You know, I think that's why sometimes I use it. It's like anyone can go on Pro Football Reference and look it up. Well, if I use EPA or something or success rate, it's like, well, True Media, you guys don't have access to it.
Man of the people, Nate Tice, right here.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm trying to be a, you know, man of the people here. But QBR 50 is like, that's average. That's, you have a 50-50 shot of winning the football game if you have a QBR 50. And he was right. Tyler Shuck was right there. So that's where this also gets into, again, I think everyone wants to talk about QB plays down, all that stuff. Defenses are really freaking good right now. I'm writing a little bit about that right now. It's, that article will come out one day. Hopefully I file it today. But the defenses are, well, it will be out now by the time this pod comes out. But
hopefully
the defenses are so good right now, but quarterbacks play, the bar is so high to be good, but the floor is really high right now. And that's why I bring up, I'm not making it up, where I think I'm comfortable 48 guys taking a snap. I'm not saying I'm going to win 10 games with all of them, but I'm saying that I'm not going to run out there and it's going to be, you know, that guy plays a couple snaps and it's going to be Tommy DeVito. I'm trying to think of some other guys, Mike White, you know, who's been a train wreck as like a backup quarterback. I'm just trying to think some recent ones, Quinn Ewers. Last year, I would not, it's like, okay, I know what you are kind of thing. He actually had some moments, but just saying guys that can go out there, Skylar Thompson. There we go. It's not like Skylar Thompson. There is. Yeah. I was trying to think of a Dolphins quarterback and I went with the wrong one.
Brady Cook. Cause like I was doing that QB draft.
And even as I tiered these guys, I have 14 quarterbacks, what I consider as tier one, tier two ish, two and a half. There's another little category I have. And then there's like another 6 to 8 tier three guys. So once we're now getting into what I could call quote unquote below average or not ideal starters, we're getting into the mid 20s of quarterbacks out of 32 starters. So just kind of painting a picture that it's a high floor right now, even if the elite quarterbacks, there's only a couple. That's why it's elite. Now everyone shouldn't be elite. There should only be two or three elite guys. Like that's how it works. Yes. That I do. I actually think there's more than that, if I'm being honest. But I just, again, just kind of get into the numbers of the quarterback spots right now, maybe my line of thinking, but you mentioned it. Well, you said the receiver guy. You maybe mentioned the entire spectrum of the position. So who was your all average candidate for the wide receiver position, Matt?
Yeah, and this was a difficult one, obviously, because it's the one I think about the most. But I actually kind of think I landed on the answer pretty quickly because I spend so much time with this. But it's funny because, yeah, like wide receivers are so many guys that see the field, right? There's just a ton of dudes who are eligible to be out there. And I think there are guys like a Michael Wilson. He's not my pick. Michael Wilson last year, where like there's a lot more to his game from a production standpoint, just circumstances. You don't really get to see it. I think that's kind of true of the guy that I ended up picking, which was Jalen Naylor of the former Minnesota Vikings and now Las Vegas Raiders. I think is a guy that's like a perfectly average wide receiver where, and I think that's why the Raiders signed him to the deal that they did. It's like, hey, this guy can, in an ideal world, is your third receiver, but if he's got to be like your number two targeted player behind Brock Bowers, that's totally fine. That's kind of what I would view as like an average receiver's ideal three, but he could be somebody that's that you could get by with as a two in the right environment.
That's kind of how I view
it. Then we hope to hopefully just make it better as the years go on. And to the point that like from a reception perception standpoint, you quite literally success rate versus man coverage 47th percentile, press coverage success rate 45th percentile. And you got to remember when I'm not charting the entire like league, I'm not charting everybody's fifth wide receiver because I do try to have some semblance of a life here. So is there some selection? Well, yeah, I got to get that Jahdae Walker profile up here shortly. Don't worry, that's got to get done. But no, I mean, obviously, so there's some selection bias in the data there, yeah. From a percentile standpoint, where my 47th percentile isn't like the, but it's still like kind of right there in the middle. So I think that makes a lot of sense for what he does. His particular areas in which he wins, which I think is very fitting for an average receiver, that there's definitely some things you can't ask the guy to do. But from a route standpoint, where he separates, I think, in the intermediate area, you know, that's something that every offense wants to access the intermediate area, whether it's on in-breakers, out-breakers, and I think he can give you some snaps there.
I think this is a perfect candidate for this. The other name that I thought of was Joshua Palmer. Like, those were the two that came to mind for me if I had a receiver. It was like Palmer. I know you're down on Palmer. You think he's below average? Even, oh, wow. Okay.
I think he's like an acceptable three. Like, that's, yes. For Naylor, I'm like, okay, cool. That's my three. I think Josh Palmer's like,
he can be a low end two. Right,
Palmer's like, yeah, like, and I'm talking about like a number three receiver. So, like, hopefully your fourth targeted player, in if like you got a good tight end or a pass. So,
a good offense.
Like, we're running out of three receiver set. I've just never been that moved on the Palmer thing. Like, but he is kind of in the same way. Then if you're stretching out the sample size where, Josh Palmer seeing the field is not humiliating. Like, that's what I mean by that. It's like, if I'm like, okay, he's my number three, cool. Not like, oh my God, Josh Palmer's my number three. Yeah. But there have been times where he's been stretched out beyond that role, and I think that's where it's not great.
It's like the Gardner Minshew of receivers. It's like, yeah, okay, yeah, he's like, not embarrassing. That's just me, really,
you're just below the average to me, and that's where I balk. Last year, I think I had Romeo Doubs in this, and so for the Jalen Naylor truthers out there, I think Doubs was like, oh, that's your, I just went X receiver last year, so this year I wanted to go move more of a move around guy, and Doubs I think was like a above average starting X receiver last year, so there you go, like this can work out.
I think I had at quarterback, I think I had Mac Jones at quarterback, if I remember correctly.
That sounds
I might be wrong there. Yeah, that seems right. That seems like a did I go? Oh, wait. I think I maybe went with, actually, I went with Darnold. So, all average. You can win the
Super Bowl.
You never know.
Congratulations, Arizona Cardinals.
You never know. You get paid and you go to Super Bowls, apparently, if you get onto this team. So, hey, this guy, arrow pointing up. I actually think this is a fun exercise, too. Like, you know, our lads actually does a nice thing where you can just filter by position for each team. Mm-hmm. And that was actually really nice for this exercise. But it's also nice to look at some rosters and be like, who has like three starting receivers that are all above average? You know, like if you look at the Jags, you're like, you know, like even if they, it's kind of fun to like look that, like, all right, who's starting three or all guys I wouldn't even consider for this exercise in a good way. And that's kind of fun to like kind of parse through too. And you're like, wow, actually some of these teams are like, okay. You know, you start looking through top threes and it's like, okay. I really like what's going on here. The Cowboys, of course. But no, it's kind of fun to kind of parse through that as well, especially for an exercise like this. Also, did I tell you I watched more Isaac Tesla? Dude.
Yeah. You excited?
He's pretty freaking good. I'm pretty excited.
I got a profile up on him. On Isaac Tesla. Yeah, no, he had a cool year last year. Yeah, you got to come on, Nate. I mean, well, hopefully you've read it by the time this has come out.
Yeah,
month.
I will. by the time middle of July, I can read this. I was watching Bears game. I was trying to watch it for the Bears, but then I just did the full game, so I was watching the Lions side too, and. God, he really came along by the season. Because I think that's his big issue is mental.
Yes.
Is that like you could tell how raw he is and like assignment wise. And then now it's starting to click. And then you see how fast he can play when it's starting to click. Mm-hmm. And it's like he moves different. He's just one of those. Like he just moves different. Sometimes those guys don't work out. And sometimes they turn into, even like Christian Watson or something like that was like that. I wasn't high on Watson, but it's like they just move differently and then you just hopefully they turn into something. So I just have to give Isaac Tesla a shot because
I like that.
You're the first one to kind of like say, hey, this guy might be something last in the draft process last year. And I just kind of kept an eye on him.
I like that. No, we put a new player comparison tool up on the site for him. And so just like you can look at his charting data and how it compares to players that I've charted throughout the course of RP history, which is since 2014. His top three comparables, I think, are funny because first is Kenny Golladay, which is hilarious because they went, there was like a joke on Twitter yeah. where it was like, obviously Calvin Johnson was Megatron. And then my buddy JJ Zach yeah. Reason was calling Kenny Golladay Babytron, which I know some like Lions fans hated, but, and then, you know, Isaac Tesla's the Vanillatron of the group there. So there's that. And so big ex-receiver
archetype. That name's never going to escape my brain now. So you just ruined my brain. Yeah, now it's Vanillatron.
I didn't come up with it. I saw it somewhere else, and then it's been stuck in my head. But anyways, Mike Williams and then Juwan Jennings were the other ones. And so, and I think that's kind of like how they used him a little bit, where it's like
yeah.
a little bit, obviously, like there's definitely some big X receiver like downfield routes to yeah. him, and actually him being that on ball player allows him to get like Jameson Williams into some fun spots, and St. Brown even to play more outside, because the other yeah the Juwan Jennings, and then even like there's an Adam Thielen, a little bit looser of a comp, but an Adam Thielen comp in there too, and your boy Josh Palmer is the fifth highest comp as well. So these guys that have been mostly boundary players but also could kick in and be yeah. kind of bigger slot options, and that's what Tesla yeah. was as a collegiate player.
And then even in that game, those two games I watched at the end of the season, they're using him more on key blocks to like fold in and mm-hmm. stuff. So
oh, yeah,
that's you earn the right to do that role because it's such a key block. So it's like the fact that they have Amon-Ra St. Brown on the roster, even Khalif Raymond is a gritty blocker, and they're just mm-hmm. like, no, we're gonna have the young guy do it. And he was like doing a good job. So it's, I don't know. There's again,
he's cool.
He's raw, but it's cool. Like, yeah, you could see it kind of turning on for him. Yeah, I've become a fan. I also got him in a dynasty league and I'm pretty fired up about it.
There we go.
No, I like the Naylor pick a lot. And we'll move on to tight ends. And this is mine. And I'm going to repeat my guy from last year, which is Cade Otton. And that's so funny because after I put his name down in the doc, I was like, I think I did Cade Otton last year. And I did do Cade Otton last year as my tight end candidate. I have another guy if we want to change it up a little bit. But Cade Otton to me, and maybe this is just my scouting assessment, and maybe it's not great in the hierarchy of the tight ends if we're looking at 40-odd tight ends that are playable, I guess is a good way to put it. Look at 32 starters plus maybe another 20-ish guys that are valid second guys, so 50. Maybe he's a little better than that. Maybe he's more like tight end 16, 17, 18, somewhere around there. But if you're just looking at starters, he just does everything average to above average. And I can't – nothing great, nothing even – maybe even good. And that's why I just consider him like the perfect all-average tight end. And I mean it more complimentary. It's like everybody would love to have a Cade Otton. But also it's just that he's not overwhelming in any area. He even went middle of the draft. Like it's kind of perfect for him. But no, a guy that I actually like coming out of college. I think he's had a nice career and like just a nice solid starter. And maybe this is even too low for him calling him average because really he's more above average. But if we're talking about that grading scale I talked about at the beginning of the show, he's like a 50, you know, a 50 out of 80 as opposed to maybe a true 40. But I had to bring him up. So I just think he's an average to above average blocker, average to above average receiver, average to above average speed, average to above average strength, average to above average size. Just everything is in that middle threshold, 40 to 50 grade, 40 to 50 grade. And maybe if I want to get one new name in here, it'd be Pat Freiermuth, who is kind of become the tight end two in the Steelers. I mean, they just paid Darnell Washington the week we're doing this pod. So you can, and even just the reps, and I think there's some Aaron Rodgers love there, but the reps that they're giving Washington is that's going to be the true de facto tight end one there because he's a true Y and has a little bit of receiving flashes. But Freiermuth, again, is kind of the same Otten tier. Everything is fine, solid, maybe just a toned down version of Otten. So he might be the better answer for this if we're really looking at the scale of like, tight end 1 to 48 or tight end 1 to 50. I think Freiermuth is more perfect to be the all average guy right here as opposed to maybe Otten. Maybe he's a slightly above average. So if we're going 12 personnel in this for the all average team, so it's Cade Otten and Pat Freiermuth for me.
Yeah, and I mean that's perfect because it's like Cade Otten's kind of more your inline guy and Pat Freiermuth is more of your average yep. move tight end type option. So yep. it is perfect. By the way, just because you mentioned, and I'll come back to Otten in a second, but just because you mentioned Darnell Washington, I got to, while we're also being, you know, radical candor here, I've always had this opinion because he's like kicked around at the bottom of one of my super deep dynasty rosters, Darnell Washington. I'm always like, for a few years in his league, I'm like, why is he just, why don't they just like throw him a pass in the flat every now and again? He's quite literally going to be bigger than any, like just physics wise, yep. he's going to be much bigger, not just like a little bit bigger, truly much bigger than anybody else is going to be trying to tackle him out there. And then they kind of did that last year. So you know what? Yeah. If the Rodgers experience gave us one thing, they got that going there. So I was glad to see him get that contract. That was pretty cool there. In addition to obviously that he truly is like the sixth offensive tackle. I say that about guys like Chris Manhurts and stuff like that, and he's in this variety as well. It's like, oh, this is another offensive tackle out there. Washington actually, what did he say on the St. Brown podcast, that he's like 315 or something?
Yeah.
It's incredible. So good for Darnell Washington. But on Cade Otton, he's the perfect pick for this. He was last year. He is this year as well. Because, yeah, he's like, when him and Charlie Kolar were coming into free agency this past year, it's like, well, Kolar definitely is going to be a better blocker for you than a Cade Otton will be. And obviously, Otton just ends up going back to Tampa Bay because they're perfectly content with just getting middle of the road tight end production because they have a bajillion receivers that they need to get activated as well. So it's like, okay, we can just set the median there. But yeah, he's not going to be necessarily, I think, the blocker that Charlie Kolar is, who's going to come in and really be an advantage piece there. But he is a good blocker, and then also is probably a more viable receiver. I mean, I always bring it up, Nate, like when Cade Otton became like the featured piece of Liam Cohen's offense for 3 weeks when all those receivers were injured in 2024. Yeah. So just like, hey, you can do that with him. He is capable. Whereas most like average Y tight ends probably could not do that.
Paul Chris, who again, former Wisconsin coach, one of my mentors, but he always had a nice line that I've stolen 100 times about maybe auxiliary receivers, is you never drop a play for him, but you're not mad that the ball goes his way. Like, you're not upset that the ball ends up going his way. You're like, okay, fine.
That's like, perfect.
And I've always, like, Otton is kind of like that to me. It helps that he's always had really good receivers around him, but it's a great point. When he's been highlighted, he's always done okay. Like, he's never, again, he's not embarrassing. And I think that's kind of like, it sounds like we're really knocking him. And it's like, this guy's a nice, solid starter. He's had a nice career. So it's kind of funny to talk about him this way.
This is what average means, though. These are all things that's what average means.
Average NFL player. That's what it means. And also, to the mountain that rides Darnell Washington, it's, you don't see that archetype anymore. Like, and I mean, maybe his career path might be like Mercedes Lewis, where it's just always just gonna like have these 1-2 year contract. I mean, you got a nice deal right now, but it's just a true Y, mow you down. You're gonna be a run first team and then auxiliary target. But I will say, Rodgers lets me see what Kenneth Gainwell and what Darnell Washington could do with more of an extended role. Some good, some a little not so good, but I will appreciate Aaron Rodgers lets me do that. See a couple pet favorites get some more reps, for better or for worse. All right, running back. Who'd you have for the all-average team?
Yeah, Rodgers not going to get the ball to your $33 million wide receiver on a consistent basis down the field, but he will activate your cute little role players. Amazing stuff.
Yes.
That's hopefully what we see out of the 2026 Pittsburgh Steelers. Okay, running back. This was another guy who was in free agency and another Liam Cohen ref here. Chris Rodriguez, Jacksonville Jaguars running back. He was with Washington the last few years. Running back is really difficult because I think that there are probably, I mean, if you did that exercise where you said like, oh, this guy can take a snap at quarterback and it's you know, a deep group, I feel like running back is just massive. Like, there's got to be a ton of guys here. So I didn't want to go like an average starter. I wanted to go kind of like an average committee member. And I feel like that's what Chris Rodriguez is. You look at some of his advanced metrics last year, it actually is really good from like a success rate standpoint. And he does have real defined strengths in his game, like around the goal line. He's a very powerful, just like chain moving back, but you know, when you're looking at him as necessarily like a pass catcher, not a lot going on there. Probably not going to play any passing downs in Jacksonville because they have LaQuint Allen, who's a great pass blocker. So yeah, he's kind of in like, who's your just, all right, this guy's an average early down hammer back. And if we got to go through a big stretch or he's getting a lot of volume, we'll probably feel pretty good about it. I mean, shoot, the Commanders were like actively trying to get him more and more work last year. And unfortunately, he dealt with some injuries. And I believe he's been dealing with an injury this offseason as well. So hopefully he stays healthy because I actually think he is in line for a nice little bit of opportunity here and has just enough skills to really get rolling right now.
I actually, when you were talking about quarterbacks figuring this out, running back would have been really hard for me because it's so hard to like, because just like you said, there's so many valid guys out there. You know, there's some good amount of stars right now at running backs, which is really fun. But there's just so many roles that you can fill. So it's like, all right, do I want the average pass catching, blocking running back? Do I want the average hammerhead? So I thought this was a perfect candidate for it. Like the first name that came to mind, and I'm not saying this would have been my answer, was like Rico Dowdle, but I think Rico might be a little bit better than this. That's like, it's not fair
that's
to him.
Funny, but then if you did the math, the first guy I thought of was Chuba Hubbard, like as a starter. You know, but I don't want him on the graphic. That would be like too mean.
Right.
You know? But so that's where it's like, all right, let's open up the field a little bit.
Yeah. I know. And it's like, even if I went through like 60 running backs, it would be really hard for me to find a guy. Blake Corum, maybe. Maybe that's a guy. Maybe that would have been the one I maybe ended up with. Where, okay, you're fine if this guy ends up your starter. He's behind Kyren Williams. It's weird. Corum's weird to me. I think he had great stats last year. And it, like, the Rams have a certain running style that they like. Kyren Williams, Blake Corum, and Ronnie Rivers all run exactly alike, which is really funny. But there's some people that are like really down on Corum, and I've never understood it because I like him better than I think other people do. And I've just, everyone always goes, why is Corum getting touches? I'm like, because he's doing well and he does everything pretty well. He does everything average or above average, perfect for the all average team. So I think Rodriguez is a great, but I think you had the best answer here, but I've just kind of been kicked around even as you're talking. And if I had to do this, like who other names that would have came to mind, but that's it for me. I think Corum might be the answer for me. Like,
yeah,
because I thought about Tyler Algier.
Pacheco was the guy that I thought Tyler Algier, but then I was like, man, and it was just a shame because I think he'll be really productive. I would think he would have been really productive had they not drafted Jeremiah Love, but and that's just kind of like the way it is. But I actually like Algier even more than Rodriguez. Too. So like, same. I thought he was too good for this. It's funny. Brian Robinson Jr. was my pick last year and he got traded before week one. So it's just like, that's where this position is. It's just, by the way, moved out of the way so they could get Chris Rodriguez more involved. Is that like hammerhead back? So a lot of connective tissue here.
I know. Tyrone Tracy might be a little too good for this. Yeah. I don't know. Running back's actually a fun one.
Tracy's actually a good one.
Tracy's
a good one.
It's kind of like who's a good number two. Like that's kind of like what you're like, who's the guy that takes 40% of the snaps and is pretty good at it. Like that's kind of what you're looking at here. Is like the candidates.
No, I actually think Tracy is perfect because the Giants have truly done this with him, where it's like, well, let's get Devin Singletary out of the way. We're going to give him a lot of work, and then it was like, all right, well, let's get Cam Scadaboo in here and give him all the work, and then crap, he got hurt. Yeah. Let's get Tyron Tracy here back in Tracy. There, and then this offseason they're like, well, we got to get Kenneth Walker or you know, what if we draft Jeremiah Love? Well, they didn't get any of those guys. Hell, we'll just run it back one more time with Tyron Tracy. So I actually kind of think he's pretty perfect for this list too.
And he's one of these guys where I don't understand. Algier, I guess, is like this a little bit too, where I'm like, I watch him, I'm like, what do you guys don't like about him? Like, I don't know. He does, I don't watch him and go, man, that guy missed a lot of holes. Man, it's not like oh, he's slow. It's like, no, he's pretty quick. He's got pretty good speed. He's got pretty good vision. Like, what there's weird things I only get to watch film of games. Maybe there's stuff in practice and meetings they don't trust, but I don't know. I've just never gotten the, like, I got to get better than this guy. It's more like, I'll get another guy to compliment him as opposed to, like, just truly replace him. That's just me. All right, we're going to take our first break, and then we're going to come back with a few more offensive linemen all average picks. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back, and we've got some awesome news for fantasy football fans out there. College fantasy football is now live on Yahoo. Start a league with your friends or join a public league at yahoofantasy.com/college. And to celebrate and to really just, you know, crack the bottle on this ship that we're calling college fantasy, we got Yahoo's new college football analyst, Eric Froton, the Torpedo. Maybe is that where we're going with? Maybe wrestling name. Eric all and day. I spent our green room hangout is probably going to be longer than this recording because we just devolved into a long wrestling. We had a Gotch reference in there in our discussion. But Eric, great talking to you. Welcome aboard. How are you doing today?
Thrilled to be here and part of the Yahoo team and to, go through the launch here of college fantasy football on Yahoo, the first major American fantasy platform to really dive into this. And as I've been doing it for 25 years, I'm a stout, staunch believer of the product. And I think everybody who tries it is going to really enjoy it.
Oh, that's awesome. No, this is going to be, I'm already giddy. I'm already trying to round up people to make a league. Maybe you and I have to get a league together because anything that I can, make sure that I can watch and go like, hey, I have to check this out. I have to see the score of this game. I just got to see how so-and-so did. I got to see if they ran for 3 touchdowns against Tulane. You know, any excuses I need is perfect to watch more football. So this would be a great way to do it. And today we're going to focus on maybe some of the college quarterbacks that you're focused on if someone were to do a fantasy draft for college football, and also just a few other questions that I have just regarding it, maybe differences, maybe your own overall strategy. We'll see where this goes, because again, if our one reference to wrestling can turn into a 30-minute discussion, who knows what's going to be excited or what's going to happen in this conversation right now. But to start, we're going to look at 3 college QBs that Eric is most excited to watch this season. He's going to be leading college fantasy football coverage this season, so I think this will be just a great way to kind of just tap into your brain and get going from there. But let's kick us off. Number one, college quarterback, and maybe just your all overall strategy when you're looking at drafting college quarterbacks for fantasy.
Yeah, well, in terms of strategy, there's a couple different eras that I actually went through in college fantasy football. First off, in the dead ball period of the 2000s and aughts, it was pretty much you needed the Hawaii or Texas Tech quarterback. If you had Timmy Chang, if you had Cliff Kingsbury, you know, and their Colt Graham Grennan,
Graham Harrell,
Sonny Cumbie, we can yes, do this like yes. we're naming off wrestlers. We can name off, you know, like yes. Texas Tech quarterbacks. Like you needed Colt one Brennan. Or you didn't win. Colt Brennan was godlike in college fantasy football for his time frame. R.I.P. to the great Colt Brennan, of course, but. That was the old, you know, that was the when the air raid, the Mike Leach air raid offense was really dominating the college landscape of quarterbacks. But with the new change in rules for the clock, where you don't stop with a first down every time, right? Drastically speeding up the game to where you can't kind of accrue the kind of passing yardage in 4-point passing touchdown leagues like our default setting is in Yahoo. You can go with 6 if you want to customize, that's fine, but our default is 4. And that is kind of, it's half and half around the industry. In 4-point passing touchdown leagues, it's simply you're not going to get the volume from these high-end air raid type passing QBs. So you have to have an element of some running ability. Now, in general, I don't need to have 1,000 yards. I don't need John Reese Plumlee to go back into a solo threat quarterback as well. Call him all run, no throw. So you don't want that either, but there's a nice little mix where you got the ability to go and throw a nice crisp 15-yard out. At the same time, if you can scramble, break pocket, and chew up yardage on the ground, and even, you know, they'll run some RPO type stuff in misdirection on the goal line, and you get some of those goal line carries too. So that really is kind of the archetype of, I want somebody who's competent in the passing side. You have to have that side for me, but a little bit of the waggle outside of structure. And that's really what we get into with the first quarterback I want to talk about, Sam Leavitt, transferring from Arizona State over to LSU. Now, that's really what he did. Last year, you know, he got hurt. But that game he had against Texas Tech, it really shows what he can do when he's getting pressured and how he can affect the game in a way that, how many times have we seen a Lane Kiffin quarterback affected? Go back to Matt Corral. You know, he had 750 rushing yards, 11 touchdowns. He's averaging 30 points a game in a 4-point passing touchdown format. You're going to plug Sam Leavitt into that system with his ability to create outside of structure, his ability to get yards on the ground. I think you're going to see him really outperform where he's being drafted right now. Currently, ADP is right around QB 14, 15. I have him for our in a power 4 only format. I have him as QB 5 right now, Nate.
No, he is, and that makes total sense that he would work for fantasy as well, because that rushing ability, his, and this is what's always hard, even because I play a ton of fantasy as well. I have to turn off my real football brain and just go, hey, no, this is good. This is good for his play style. Like for him as a prospect, I've gotten lower on him because of the rush. He relies too much on the rushing ability. He's not very big. But for this and for production, oh, yeah. So I'm right there with you. I think this is a great tout. LSU is going to be loaded as well. I mean, everyone just talked about the money or the money that they're spending. But also Kiffin, I'm glad you brought Matt Corral too. It's a money play offense. Like again, I might have qualms within a real football sense, but for generating production and cheap production, like you mentioned the rushing touchdowns, I can get into this. that's no, this is, he's real. He's the perfect fit for this type of offense because Dart was kind of this play style as well. So I think, yeah, I think real football sense, there's going to be some money here, but I also think in fantasy terms, I think this is a great shout out as well. Are there other offenses? You mentioned Leach back in the day, maybe June Jones's offense at Hawaii, those old run and shoot offenses. And then now we're talking about Kiffin. Are there any other offenses or like trees that you're always like, this guy is going to be probably underrated but he's not in this offense, or is in this offense, I should say.
Always Lincoln Riley over there at USC when he was at Oklahoma. Keep in mind, yeah. Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, yeah. You had Jalen Hurts. You had Baker Mayfield. You had Kyler. Yeah. You had Caleb. Like,
yes.
An absolutely kingmaker at the quarterback position. And Jaden Mayava, you know, they thought it was going to be Miller Moss a couple years ago. Jaden Mayava comes in from UNLV, Calandria coming from UNLV over to Nebraska too. They've been kingmakers. Shout out to Dan Mullen, obviously.
Yes.
Why was Dan Mullen fired at Florida? Look what has happened there. Anyways, I'm sorry, I digress. The point is, definitely you want to be paying attention to anything Lincoln Riley's doing. And then just, I would say, not even, you know, aside from coaching, just the power of different teams. Like, you know, when you have an alpha dog in a conference like the Big Ten, it's not like the SEC. The Big Ten, you're going to have the Oregons, the Indianas, the Ohio States, and they are true 800-pound gorillas in that place, and they're just batting around the Marylands and the Rutgers, the UCLAs, you know, of the world. So there's going to be a vast disparity in the level of play between the top teams in that conference and the bottom teams. And when you have schedules, but Oregon and Indiana have a couple of beauties this year. You're going to see the Dante Moores be able to rack up all the points they want in that sort of a system, but even though he doesn't run as much. But also, if we're getting a system, SMU, Rhett Lashley over there, the air raid tree as well. You know, Kevin Jennings distributing there at SMU. They're always scoring points, and they're in an ACC where their offense is going to be a lot more powerful than those defenses are going to be able to handle.
And I know, and sorry, before we get to quarterback too, on your list is – I know that the default setting, like you said, is the Power Four schools. And that's actually a great point that, like, the Blue Bloods, like you mentioned, the Gorillas, like, as we're including Indiana now.
Yo,
that's 2026 now. That's 2026. That's so true because you're just looking within those conferences as opposed to the King of the MAC or the King of the Sun Belt. And there's some guys there and players there. Again, if you're including those schools too, I'm sure those are more available. But no, that's a great point to bring up. Which then, I'm curious about your quarterback too, because I think this is your quarterback too. At least it's on my outline. But this guy is, or the second quarterback you want to talk about, this guy I'm very intrigued from a real football sense and as a prospect. So I'm very curious what you think about him in fantasy terms as well.
Yeah. Jaron Kiave.
And I want you to say his name.
Yes. Don't worry.
JKS.
It's a big test. JKS. We can, from here forward, you know, colloquially known on this show. But JKS. I had the pleasure of watching him 2 years ago at the Elite 11 when he was senior, going into senior year. And frankly, he was a three-star caliber prospect when I had seen him there. He goes out in that showcase and he blew everybody away, you know. And this is because he's a kid. He came from Hawaii. Like, we just didn't know. You know what I mean? Like, you just don't know. And those island folk, they're growing big out there. Oh, those Polynesian boys, man, you don't want to mess with them. I don't, at least. But and you see Jaron, he's got that big, strong, powerful frame, and he channels his lower body so well. And he just, you saw him just became the talk of, even though he didn't win the Elite 11, he was the talk of it because he blew everybody away in terms of that arm strength and what he could do and the kind of throws he could make that are just rare. And he just went and brought that forward last year as a freshman to Cal. Because keep in mind, he was at Oregon is where he started. He immediately transferred out to Cal quickly and started game one right out of the gate, true freshman starter at a Power Four level. First of all, that says a lot. And they weren't playing Cal in their first game. They didn't play a laydown. They played Oregon State. So it wasn't like, hey, we're going to throw him up against Sacramento State. We're going to give him a little FCS time. They threw him right out there through every pass. He had through the second most passes in the country last year as a true freshman with a defensive coach and Justin Wilcox, who's now gone. You got Tosh Lupoy in. But the point is, as a true freshman, what he did, he only had a 20% off-target rate. He was 26 out of 98 qualifying quarterbacks with 100 and more dropbacks in off-target rate. And if you're watching his on-target throws, his arm, it's a laser. There's no hump. There's nothing in that ball that shows that gravity is having even the most minute effect on it. I look at the way he throws, and he's a lefty, so, like, you know, you have to calibrate it, but it's the way that the ball pops out of Stafford's hand. It's that power, that pop. And if you go and you watch just one game, and even if you just watch, like, Oregon State, because he had so many more, but just you go and watch the first game he had as a freshman, and he's making high-level throws downfield. He's directing traffic on broken plays, and even when you can roll him out, even though he's not a running quarterback, and he's throwing extremely competently, even going to the right, where you see him make a couple throws during the season where he's going right as a lefty, and he doesn't even have time to torque. He just sort of, you know, flicks, and he's throwing bullets out there 20 yards downfield on the sideline. I just think the arm talent is so prodigious that as a true freshman, now you have Jordan Somerville come in, who was the assistant QB coach for 3 years at Tampa Bay when Baker made his leap. The pass game specialist, they're building everything around it. Ron Rivera went in last year as the GM to kind of take things over, brings in Tosh Lupoy, which is an incredible hire as the Oregon DC. I think the sky is the limit for JKS, and I think he has real first round, even QB1 in his 2028 draft potential.
I really, really like him as a again, like in the real football prospect terms, because like you mentioned with his arm, it's that kind of arm. It's a real top 10 draft pick type of arm. And like you said, he was so productive in high school. And then he comes in, and I'm glad you brought up the Elite 11 thing, because it's like a legendary performance. Like, you are maybe the fifth person I've heard talk about this performance by him at that camp. And it's just one of those things, because everyone's just like, you should have seen it. You should have seen it. Like, this guy's like, he's the 3-star with all these big other recruits, and everyone just, all they wanted to talk about was him. Like, because it's just the arm talent he has. But he has that mindset. You mentioned Stafford, but again, he has that mindset you want too, because he's willing to chuck it. It comes out on time. The SMU game at the end of the season was kind of the culmination, I think, of his freshman year. He finished 330 yards, 4 touchdowns. They won the game. And you mentioned too, is that on third down, they're not running like gimmicky, make it easy on them. They're running like real downfield passing concepts. And so that's why I'm encouraged. I'm glad you brought him up, because I want to talk about him just in a normal sense. But I was curious, you know, too, because his rushing, he's an okay athlete. You know, that's not how he wants to win. But man, it's like, God, he can chuck it like the real guys do. So, and Ron Rivera already referred to it when they were like, no, we're all in on him bringing him back. Because everyone's like, oh, he's going to transfer. And then Coach Tosh, I think it was day one after he got hired, he flew all the way down to Hawaii to go like, we're good, right? And he was like, we're good? Okay. And then flew all the way back to Oregon to like, okay, well, or to Oregon or North or to the Bay Area to be like, okay, we're good. Okay, we'll figure out the rest of this team. But he's that type of talent. The 2028 class has got some really cool names. Maryland's quarterback too.
Washington. Love him. Oh, Washington. Malik Washington. Right? Big arm. Another big arm.
Dude, he's another one. And these are the guys, and we're not even like Underwood and stuff. It's like, okay, I'm moving on from you. It's like, I got these other names I'm looking at right now for this class.
After that Underwood spring game that he had, you could argue they've even passed him on the prospect front. Because that arm of JKS, you can't replicate it. You got it or you don't. There's no teaching that.
That's it. He's a natural thrower of the football. It's frustrating. I know everyone thinks they could just have their kid go to a coach at 9 years old and it's going to teach them. Some guys could just chuck it. It is what it is.
Nature over nurture at some point, you know, and with some of these guys, and that's one of them.
Yep. Man, that's a great shot. I'm a big fan of JKS. Now, the next quarterback on your list is one that's the opposite. This is the one I'm low on as a prospect, but understand what he is as a college player. And this goes back to I'm spoiling your hand here, but goes back to the gorillas in the conference and kind of just going with those players. But your next quarterback on your little short list, Eric.
Yeah, and these guys, you know, we're interested in seeing how it goes. And that will be Carlsbad, his their own Julian Sayin.
I had the opportunity. These guys now.
Oh yeah, I know. I did have the opportunity to obviously see him as well. He was in the same class as JKS, and when watching him, well, actually, excuse me, he was the class after, but he was there with Rayola. It was him and Rayola that were there, and we all expected everybody was ready to see Dylan. And while the arm strength, you know, was certainly there, the totality of his performance wasn't. What really struck me with Julian right out of the gate is you're watching him going through his throws, and they're doing the stationary 35-yard throw with your feet planted and you're just rotating, and you're throwing that guy's fixed target 35 yards downfield. And it was really that just little drill is more of a separator than you'd think in that first day of camp when you're watching him. And he was consistently able to torque and, you know, get his arm and throw that ball on a line 35 yards downfield. And he had a great camp, won the Elite 11, things like that. I actually got to talk with him, and because he's a Southern California boy down here in San Diego County in Carlsbad, I actually went up and did watch one of his workouts. I didn't watch it, I should say. I went out and ran a full route tree with Julian Sayin throwing to me when he was doing his stuff with Carlsbad High School. So I went out there in the summer after that. I was like, I got to see this. So I went out. It was Aiden Sayin, who is Julian's older brother, who's a 4-year starter at Penn.
Yeah.
So there's lineage, the older brother and then the younger brother thing. Mm-hmm. So it was both of them there. Both of them extremely sharp. And that's something that, you know, you can't see on the field, is that mental makeup with Julian. He's a competitor. He's a killer. And I mean, in a competitive sense, he's very focused. He's sharp and dedicated. And like you can see when I was talking, just going through him, how precise he is. Like, and that perfectionist attitude is what I really resonated to me when going through it. That and just the incredible catchability of his ball. It's so clean coming out. It's so smooth. It's so precise that, I mean, even a relative hack like myself can go out there and look pretty good. So when we were doing the lines, I don't know how this is with you. You are obviously beyond reproach and this sort of thing. But the last throw of the tree is the go ball 50 yards downfield. And if you don't catch the go ball, you got to go back until you catch it.
Yep.
I was sweating this go ball from Julian. Let's be said. I didn't know if I could run.
Were you tapping the hammies a little bit, just making sure they're awake?
I was limbering up, we'll say that. Yeah, I knew it was coming. I stumbled out of my break on the first, one. So I wanted to make sure I got this. And by the grace of the good Lord, he threw me it had baby powder on it, this deep one. And even I was able to corral it 50 yards downfield. It's just like a puff of smoke came when it hit my hands. So I will say, that being said, with Julian, that sort of the cleanness, the catchability of his ball, how clean it comes out of his hand. It doesn't have the pop, obviously, of a JKS. Very few people do, but it's a tight, clean spiral, and it's true in its trajectory and where it's going. It's going where he wants it to go very often. And that really bore itself out in his first year as a starter. Second among Power 4 quarterbacks in accuracy rate, 74% accuracy rate, 5% higher than the next highest quarterback, who was the number one overall draft pick, Mr. Mendoza, right?
Yeah.
Second lowest interception rate of the entire Power 4 landscape of quarterbacks. So while I know that was he doing the kind of things, was he throwing people open in the kind of context that JKS was? I understand that he wasn't, and he had Connell Tate, and he has Jeremiah Smith, you know, and my gosh, the talent around him.
They have four more behind them.
Now you got Chris Henry coming
in. Chris Henry Jr., I was just going to say, and then they got another one coming in, I think the year after. That's going to be a freak too. I know.
Everybody is just so much, but I know. I think that kind of works against him.
Yeah,
I know. Like, and look, the hits, I totally understand the knocks on him. But that's why I'm so interested to see, after he's got a year under his belt, he's already proven as a first year starter to be so precise and so dialed into the offense, you know, and it goes into that cerebral sort of a you know, attitude that he has, where he's very analytical. And I like smart QBs who see the field. I understand about the arm talent limitations, you know, and really the pop that you're talking about.
But that's a different combo.
I'm curious at what you see, because it was a great discussion point, and what makes it interesting to see Saiyan in year two.
Yeah, no, everything you're saying is that those are his strengths. And then I mean, so accurate. And this timing's pretty dang good for a guy that's just in his first year of the offense. Well, new OC this year, but first time playing, I should say, in college. And this is where it's just that he is kind of maxed out. And that's why it's just the prospect terms. It's different. But the thing is, as a college football operator, he's exactly what you want, because he doesn't make mistakes. And so it's like, hey, this guy, we designed this guy to be open. The ball's going to get there on time and accurately. It's just that once you get to the NFL, it's then what can you do when it goes off script? And then, but that's the thing. That's the different conversation here than having what we're talking about, just in fantasy terms or just production. That's why he's not going to, it's like a really good jockey in horse racing. He might not win you every game, but he's not going to lose you a game. And that's what they say a good jockey in horse racing is. He might not win you the race, but he's not going to lose you the race. And that's what I kind of view Saiyan as, that type of operator. And when you have a thoroughbred, you're riding like Ohio State, that a good jockey is really good to have. Where is he kind of – who's like your QB1 when you just have your big board, like for this year?
Sure. And as you'd expect, due to the lack of rushing in any way, shape, or form, you're not going to get much out of him there on the rushing front. I mean, maybe if he popped in,
especially
five,
with Arthur Smith, man, they're just gonna pound that rock from I formation three times in a row. So he's not. I don't think there's gonna be many zone reads.
It'll be Bo Jackson. The new, just so you know, there is a new Bo Jackson. I want to scare everybody. Like, wait, hold on. I thought he had a hip injury. He probably, without the hip injury, the real Bo Jackson might still be able to play.
Hip still at the Coliseum.
Potentially. Still laying there. Potentially, but I'm sorry, I digress. With Saiyan, you're looking at firmly in like a tier four type guy in a power four context, like I'm around QB 25, roughly.
Yeah.
Which is, but, you know,
the
if
numbers
you're,
are going to be so much better than that.
Yeah, no, totally. Because if you're in, but there's no rushing aspect to
keep in mind
with Ohio State, right? The years of 45 points a game out of a Ryan Day offense have gone by the wayside. Do you know that Ohio State had the slowest pace of play in the entire country last year? They're just
really
short. Oh yeah, because they get up on these teams like we talk about,
yeah,
and they just want to shorten the game.
Yep.
Second half, run it.
Yeah. We don't need 80 plays. We'll just run 60.
Stay safe. We're up 35 points. Let's put the boys on ice and let's move on to the next game. And that's what all the teams, you saw Miami was the same way.
Yeah.
Running, slowing the pace down, fewer plays. And that's sort of it's going to favor, the shorter game is going to favor the better team, you know, on paper. And that's really what the theology is there. So that's another reason why Julian doesn't have quite the pop of guys who would have more rushing potential. The slow pace really does take a lot out of it. But still, you gotta remember, QB 25, a lot of them you're going to have super flex leagues. Our default is one QB. Super flex, going to have a lot of the two QBs leagues. He is such a great, safe QB 2 that you know you can plug and play, and you're not going to get a dud out of him. You're going to get at least 20 points because he's going to have, you know, roughly three touchdowns, around 250 yards passing. It's a safe floor for him. So that's really the appeal. And then sometimes he'll pop, but it's not going to be
a no, that, and also too, you got to think when these blue blood teams, there's a lot of three play drives. Plays, 75 yards, and he threw it once, but then they ran it twice, and they went for 55 yards and they scored. Like, there's a lot of those drives too. And it's like, all right, the ones are coming off. They ran 22 plays and they scored 42 points. that's what it feels like. Eric, thank you so much for joining me. This was great. I'm sure I'll be hitting you up plenty over the next coming weeks and months as I try and scrounge up some of these college fantasy leagues. But thank you for joining us. Welcome to the team. And if you're a college football fan, make sure to check out his work on Yahoo Sports this fall. But Eric, thanks again.
That's right. College fantasy football here on Yahoo. We're taking over.
The adjective play. Yeah, that's right.
We love adjectives here on the 3-in-1 show. But.
Kevin, I know you're smart, but it's not that you didn't use the right word there. No, Eric, thank you so much, man. This was a ton of fun. But we're going to take a break real quick, and we'll be right back with the rest of the 2026 All Average team. We are back. Some offensive linemen. All Average show here. We're going to go with offensive guards. This was mine. And this was hard, actually, for me, because it's like some of the guys I nominated, I actually think are a little bit better. So the first name that came to mind was Matthew Bergeron. Matthew Bergeron's better than average. And so that actually kind of like, all right, you're off, Matthew Bergeron. And then I was like, Osiris Torrence for the Bills was my next answer. And I looked at mostly just starters. So that's 64 guys.
Totally.
Torrence, again, might be slightly better than that, but that's who I'm going to go with as at least my one answer. And then I have another guy because I can't help myself again. Osiris Torrence for the Bills. It's been a nice, solid starter, I was put it. I think solid and average kind of translate well. A mauler, pass protection, can get a little caught up with some speedier guys and quicker guys in the interior. But man, just been a big part of that identity for the Bills of just being a mauling O-line and having really good run games the last few years. Been really a big part of that transformation that they've had. Where I think that's what's been cool about the Bills O-line is that I would say, you know, Deion Dawkins is probably a good starter, you know, basically Pro Bowl quality. And then when they had Edwards before he left as well, and then McGovern, is that those guys were at least above average to good. And I would say his science is maybe more above average, but he's not below average, as what I'm getting to. And then Spencer Brown's been really improved and probably good when he's been out there. So it's kind of why that O-line has been kind of what it is maybe they don't have the true star. Dawkins would be kind of the star of the group, but they have no real weakness. And I know people love that weak link term, you know, weak link system, but it's true for offensive line. If you don't have that guy to pick at, it's a lot more difficult for defensive coaches to kind of come up with a game plan and go like, all right, we're going to keep attacking the guard. We're going to keep attacking the right tackle. We're going to keep attacking the center. And you kind of feel that with teams that have one lesser offensive lineman or two, like the Seahawks at, you know, right guard and center. So Osiris Torrence was one. And then the other, and I think this actually would probably be my answer, so sorry, graphic people, would be Tyler Steen, who is a guard slash tackle for the Eagles. He's played both, but ended up being their guard. And just because I actually had a little bit more hopes for him early in his career, but he's kind of just settled into like a fine starter. So if we want to fill out the whole all average team, I got two guards now. So we got two guards for the team, for the graphic, if you want to do it. But Tyler Steen from the Eagles, who I just think is more of a fine, solid starter, and Osiris Torrence in that group as well. But I just looked at more starters, the 60-ish locked-in starters going into the season for kind of my grouping here, as opposed to 120 guards. And yes. I do have takes on a lot of them, but it's like, oh man, guys, I'm sorry for this assignment. I'm not going to go parse through and get to, all right, who's offensive guard 58 here? So going with Osiris Torrence from the Bills.
I think that's perfect, and that's exactly what I did with tackle too, because I have offensive tackle. Maybe we can come up with a second one because I only have one. There's a few guys on my short list though. We could kick around, but
yeah, who's your tackle? Anyways, get into it.
Well, I just wanted to say too about like these two guys you came up with, especially Steen. I think is perfect for this. Torrence maybe just slightly better, but like
yeah.
Because people talk about the weak link, and this was my thought process. I had the exact same thought process as well. It's like, I'm actually not looking for the weak link because I'm looking for an average player, like an average starter here at this. And it's like, yes, if your worst guy, right, which I think Steen would probably be the worst guy on the Eagles offensive line, is like an average starter, that's great. That's perfect. That's not actually a weak link, because average is not, again, we keep coming back to this, average is not weak. So we're not looking for that, like, yes, oh, the weak link system on the offensive line. We're actually just kind of looking at a guy that you can go out there and like play with. Yep. And he's your worst player, but that can still be a very, very good offensive line, which obviously your two guys perfect for this. They come from Buffalo and Philadelphia, two really good offensive lines.
Right. C's get degrees. And that's, we're kind of looking for that B minus C plus starter here. You know, that's kind of what we're going for with this kind of grouping. No, but tackle, I'm starting to jot down maybe a second name, but who'd you go with tackle for your all average pick?
Okay. Yeah. Curious to hear where you'd go with this, because the guy that I ended up with was Rashid Walker, who ended up.
That's a great answer, though.
I thought this was a good answer because he's kind of been that guy that we just talked about for the Packers, where, all right, he's our guy. Like, cool. It's fine. But they're probably always looking, you know, you're always looking for something else. And that's kind of what the average team is. And I felt like they were just never really committed there, obviously, for him as the long-term guy. But he was a perfectly capable and you know, viable starter. I wouldn't say like a great or needle moving starter, but a perfectly good viable starting left tackle. I think he got a little less money in free agency than people expected because of medical concerns, reportedly, was what the word was there. But then again, his place in Carolina I think also makes perfect sense here too, because they lose Ike Ekwonu, their starting left tackle, who maybe was another guy that they're always kind of wandering eye there a little bit with him, and can we get better than this. But they lose him. They draft Monroe Freeling, obviously, after signing Rashid Walker. And I think that's perfect. It's like, okay, well, if we come into camp here and Monroe Freeling, who I know you really liked and your dad really liked and a lot of smart people really liked Monroe Freeling. I liked the movement skills as well on tape. I'm not nearly an offensive line connoisseur, but I really liked the upside projection there. But what if he's just not fully ready because he was a kind of a late bloomer, the whole deal. He's a little bit more of like a ball of clay type. Well, we can start Rashid Walker for 6, 7, 8 games or something like that and feel really good about it, which I think is perfect for the starting left tackle of the all average team.
I thought this was a great nomination because that's exactly what he is. And it's crazy. I would say his case ended up being weird because of, like you said, with the injury stuff, but like a guy that was maybe comparable to him was like Dan Moore from Pittsburgh. And you saw how much money he got paid when he got signed by the Titans. And I would say Rashid Walker is like a little bit better than that. But that's kind of that Dan tier.
Moore didn't go well.
Dan Moore is the baseline for you can start, you know, as opposed to like, this is a great difference. Like we even talked, I kind of had the line at the beginning of the show. Difference between WAR, win above replacement, and WA, win above average, where Walker is average, Moore is replacement. Like that is the high, like, that he's the one step above replacement level, you know, like he can start for you, but man, we got to be looking for getting better in here. While Walker, it's more like, okay, we can tolerate this for a little bit. And I do understand that I was okay with the Moore signing when it happened, because I was saying it's hard to find just even a guy with a pulse. The other names that kind of came to mind, you know, there's actually some decent, like Terrence Steele in this day and age. Like after all these injuries have accumulated, he's kind of turned into an average guy. He was better than that, I think, when healthy. So it feels weird kind of considering him here. The other guy that kind of came to me was Roger Rosengarten, the right tackle for the Ravens. That was one that kind of came to mind for me, was maybe dropping him. He could be the right tackle. And then maybe Morgan Moses for the Patriots was another one where it's like,
that's you're funny, fine with Moses. Yeah, so polar ends of the career. I didn't want to go with anybody who was like kind of too young. So Rosengarten was right on the barrier there. I'm like, okay, what if he takes a step? I also thought about like Patrick Paul, I think was a start, like an average kind of starter, but I think he could be better. Like he's better than star, that by the end of he was going to be better. That was kind of my thing here. It's like for at large points of the year, I'm like, okay, that's an average starting tackle. But then by the end of the year, I'm like, oh, he's whooping ass. And then I think by the end of this year, you could be like, yeah, this guy's awesome. So that's kind of the concern, I think, with going with like an average. It's like a young guy, right? So I didn't want to go with anybody that was too. Yes, like I wanted to go with all the kind of second contract players, and that was why I went with Walker. I would say kind of a guy that is a first contract player. So I'd like to contradict myself a little bit. Like DJ Glaze was a guy I kind of thought about. Where I think he was kind of average the in 2024, like this kind of acceptable, and then I don't think really performed at an average level last year, but how much of that was coaching and the whole deal. So those are kind of just some other names to kick around.
Yeah, I know there's more viable candidates for this, which actually is not, you don't want bad. If you're living with C pluses at O-line, you can actually get away with it for a little bit. Yeah. You want A's, but it's like, as long as you just don't have F's, if you have an F or a D, that's when life is really tough for you. I think all those candidates were good ones. And I like your line of thinking too. Like, Rosengarten could get a little better. He has. I think Paul's, we're doing the breakout player. I'm sure by the time this pod's come out, I'm sure I've talked about him at one point. But I am pretty optimistic about what he can become. He's really cleaned up a lot from when he was at Houston. And I was bullish on him coming out of college, and I understood how raw he was for, and I thought the rawness came. My argument for him was, it was kind of like Drake May a little bit. If you consider him this raw and he's doing what he's doing, okay, then let's clean up some technique. What will he become? If you already think he's pretty decent and he has tools and he's doing this, it's not like he was just losing all the time. It was just that his hands were all over the place. That's the most fixable thing for quarterback or for offense tackles, his hands. Just get them tighter. And he's gotten them tighter. And I also thought McDaniel used them in great ways, get him out on the move. So thank you for letting me talk about Patrick Paul a little bit more. All right, let's go center. And we just keep talking about Panthers offensive lineman or former Panthers offensive lineman here, Cade Mays. But he just signed with the Lions, which I think is going to be a great scheme fit. And I think it was a great lower middle class signing for the Lions, who need to keep accumulating talent back on their offensive line. Now, center was really, really hard because there are about a dozen average centers in the league right now. And it's really what flavor you want to go for. And I'll just even consider my little quote unquote short list of guys I looked at. Josh Myers, Tyler Biadasz, who I think is better than this. So that's why he graduated. John Michael Schmitz, Cade Mays, who I just mentioned. Sean Ryan, Ryan Neuzel from the Falcons. Coleman Shelton, who went from solid to bad to back to solid. That helps when Sean McVay is coaching for you. And then Jake Brendel a little bit, but that's, you know, some scheme stuff there as well. But that was kind of just what flavor you want. I went with Mays because I like his flavor. He's got a little bit more bulk than some of these other guys. He got some movement skills. We can move some people as a blocker as well. I think it's going to be a great fit for what the Lions want to be, or hopefully always try to be. So, yeah, Cade Mays was my candidate here because I think it's more like of this group, kind of just prefer him the most. I like Neuzel a little bit too from the Falcons as well, as more of a zone-ish guy. But yeah, Mays was my candidate of this group.
Neuzel's a good like anecdotal selection because I think that was the exact thought process that the Falcons, and for once they sold us something and it actually was correct. We're like, yeah, we're fine with Drew Dahlman leaving because we just got Ryan Neuzel. It's like, oh wow, you sure? And actually it was like, yeah, it was fine. Right. Like what they sold us was it was fine, and it was fine. So I actually think like anecdotally he's a really good answer there. But I'm glad that you said it on Cade Mays for a couple of reasons. One, because I actually feel like we talked about him a lot during free agency because it was a viable center that was available. And the Panthers have kind of run out just a lot of these type of guys where it's like they're average, but they get them into their kind of ecosystem from a rushing standpoint, and they get really good play out of these guys. So very excited if they can hit on a guy like Monroe Freeling to see what that can do for them. Cause I just think we talk about the Panthers running back for like 30 minutes one time during the season on the fantasy show. And a lot of that was because of just like what they were cooking. It's like these, by the way, two backs we mentioned in the average section there, Chuba Hubbard and Rico Dowdle. So if what they're selling us about Jonathan Brooks right now and how good he looks, that's like something to just kind of file away because they pretty much run like average offensive linemen ish and average backs and get a pretty good run game consistently. Cause I think Canales is good at designing this Brad Idzik is good at designing it. He's going to be calling it this year. So that's another part of it. And also just last point on Cade Mays too. I think we said this when we talked about him a lot during free agency, but I was reminded of it because I just got done charting Tetero McMillan not too long ago and Jalen Coker, and every time I watch the Panthers when Cade Mays was starting, it really does stand out how big like he is as a center. He's just huge, a unit ass out there. Yeah, he just looks like just looks like a damn brick out there, like just a rectangle in the middle of the offensive line. So I am pretty excited. Not that I think he was poorly coached whatsoever in Carolina. I just said there was a good rushing ecosystem, but I'm pretty excited to see what like Hank Fraley and those guys can do with him in a very gap based run scheme at times. Obviously they do a lot of zone, but like they can lean into some gap stuff that's fun in Detroit.
Yeah. Joe Gilbert, the offensive line coach for the Panthers, has done a real nice job of developing guys, but it's like you said, they try to. I mean, like they had to start Yosh Nijman last year. They just had to like find starters because they're battling injuries. But I'm glad you mentioned the Rashid Walker, even the Monroe Freeling transition plan. Like that, people are knocking the Patriots right now too for this too. We're really going, did you just draft Will Campbell to be our left tackle of the future? It's like, yeah, but plans change. And it's not the worst thing to also just have depth at offensive line. No, it's rare for an offensive line to stay healthy the whole year. Rare. Like the Bills did for two straight years in 2023 and 2024, and then it kind of got banged up last year. Brown missed a bunch of games. So it just, it's like, it's not a bad plan to just have depth in the succession plan at your positions too. So I just want to reiterate that. If you look at mock draftable and compare Cade Mays coming out of college, he's gained weight, but he was 6'4", 3/4" and 3'11" coming out of college, above 80th percentile of centers in their database, 97th percentile arm length at 34 1/4, 10 inch hands, and 95th percentile wingspan as well. No, he's a big center in a league that has, because there's so many Shanahan schemes, has kind of like been okay with having smaller guys. You can, center is great. You can make a lot of body types work at center. That's like centers and safeties are more alike than I think people realize, and like how you try to like weigh them and value them and all that. There's a lot of body types that work at the position. You just got to make it work for you. But it's fun to see a guy like with a big ass like Cade Mays making it work along with all the zone guys in the league right now.
Big ass.
All right, we're going to take our last break.
One last shout out real quick, just while we're talking Panthers run game. I just want to, just because we didn't mention him, Harold Goodwin's the run game coordinator, and he's done a great job there as well. Just Gilbert, Goodwin, Canales is hired, and Idzik, like he's kept a pretty good coaching staff down there. So again, I think it's just when we're constantly praising like all these average players that are playing pretty well in Carolina, I do think the coaching staff deserves a good shout out there. Man, so, yeah, Harold Goodwin's been in that. Yeah, he's been around there for a while. He's been there with Canales, and he was there in Tampa Bay.
No, that's a great point. He was at the Bucs, and he's an Arians guy, a Bruce Arians guy.
Mm-hmm.
And this makes a lot. You just completed like a puzzle piece in my head, so I appreciate you. He's a Munchak guy, and then he became a Bruce Arians guy because he was with the Steelers and all that. Their run scheme makes so much more sense now.
It's like, doesn't it?
You just clicked a lot in my brain there, because that's Mike Munchak stuff. That's what I mean. It's what the Rams are doing right now. That's what the Rams have been trying to do with their offensive line, at least, anyways. Wow. You just really click something for my brain. And that's why they transitioned their duo game, but they got bigger at center. Huh. So thank you. Appreciate that. So great shout out right there with Goodwin. Defense on the all average team. We're starting with corners. Who you got for me, Matt?
Okay, I'm going to make the case that corner is the hardest one to pick of the entire group. I think last year I went with Cam Taylor-Britt and Darius Williams, which were like two different guys. And the thing that's so tough with corner is that it's the, I think, most volatile position maybe in the entire NFL, where not only year to year, great players can be anywhere between the, unless you're Patrick Surtain and you're just pretty much like up there every single year, but you can be anywhere from like the third best corner to the 13th best corner in the NFL within a given season. And then game to game, you can be like really good. Even if you're a great player, like right, one of the best in the NFL. Like, obviously, I think this happens this happens a lot with some of the great players. Like 90% of the game, you were awesome, but those handful of plays could really get you. Like Derek Stingley against Kayshon Booty. Like, he's great the entire game, but then Kayshon Booty runs a run go around. It's like, oh, terrible game from Derek Stingley. So. Tough position because it's volatile season to season, game to game. So really difficult to pick. I ended up going with Brandon Stevens. Used to be with the Ravens, with the Jets now. And the reason that I went with Brandon Stevens, because I watch a ton of corner play when I'm charting receivers.
Yeah.
And Stevens is one of the funnier corners to me because I actually think he's not the worst coverage player in the NFL. But then you look at all of his coverage statistics and they're atrocious. Oh, passer rating allowed is the highest in the NFL. It's up there, you know, just looking at him, because he cannot play the football at the catch point. It's crazy. He's always losing contested catch situations. He's never good like when the ball's in the air. But I actually do think when you watch him on a snap to snap, and obviously last year he didn't have an interception because nobody on the Jets had an interception, which is still an insane thing to say out loud.
So insane.
But I do think coverage wise, you can play him and it's not humiliating, but he's gonna give you some humiliating moments because that's cornerback play. Like, these guys are in a pretty brutal spot.
Man, I have no idea who I'd answer for this, because it's like, you look at, it's hard because there's not like a stat I could just go, yeah, that's it. Because like you said, it's more about multiple years of play because of the ups and downs of it all. And even just when I want to say this too, it's like where people go, well, just use a 1 year sample size for stats. It's like, sometimes I can do that. But even in baseball, which has thousands and thousands of data points and way more compartmentalized stuff that's very clean about how you can use the stats. Well, it's basically an individual sport disguised as a team sport. They will even say the fielding stats, you got to look at 2 and 3 year sample sizes, because it's just like 1 year could be so volatile. You get a general idea, this guy's pretty good, but some guys might be at the top of the leaderboard and you're like, what? And then the next year they're below average. And over time you can start seeing it all. But why I'm bringing that up is in football, which has way fewer data points on stuff. Now imagine corner play. Now you're just looking at like sometimes 2 or 3 targets a game, 40 an entire season, and 2 of them can skew all of your stats completely. So that's why it's a piece of the puzzle, especially at this position, but or at stats, I should say, are a piece of the puzzle. I don't know who I would go with. Monteric Brown, maybe, for the Jags. He might be a little bit better than that. I know. And again, do I look at slots? Because then that opens up a whole bunch. I should have maybe even thrown a slot in here. Like, yeah, there's some better guys. Like, his teammate Wright, Deshaun Wright, that they got from the Bears. Again, he was very statistically great last year, but he's kind of more of an all-average candidate as well. Man, just going through the list. God, Dolphins. Have you looked at Dolphins corners again recently? I know they drafted Chris Johnson, but man,
that team. You could have said this 365 days ago about the Dolphins cornerbacks. Yeah, it's brutal.
I know. That's why even people trying to get optimistic about the Dolphins, Mike, just look, I understand you can have optimism about stuff, but this year is not the year. Spending more money on dead cap than your actual cap or actual players on the roster. So, no, I think this is a great candidate. This was tough. Like the Chargers corners, Tarheeb Still and Cam Hart. Do I consider them amazing players? No. I consider them above average players, but they play the system perfectly.
They're so good in the system. That's so hard.
Yeah, on my grading scale, they're above average. Yeah, I know it's all average, but they play better than that. You know, so that's another thing. Well, I could take Riley Moss, who gets dunked on all the time, but I could plop him in any defense, and he's going to be above average to good. I would consider him good. It's just a fun conversation. So I thought you came up with a great answer or two. I've just been maybe stalling trying to find a better answer, but I thought you nailed it. Greg Newsom, maybe. Maybe that's one. I don't know. All right, let's get on to safeties. And again, I'm me. And actually, I nominated a candidate from the same defensive backfield. Andre Sisco, former Jack, now Jet. And he's just average. I've always waited for a breakout. I always waited for a consistency with him. It's flashes. And then you're like, yeah, I'm okay with him playing. But yeah, this is what we have. So he's one. And then Brian Cook, who just got recently, former chief, now with the Bengals. So those were my two. Brian Cook, to me, again, kind of like that discussion about Kate Otten, does a lot well, okay, to above average, but nothing good or great. And he, to me, is an average. And I just looked at starters here. So to me, he's kind of that 25th-ish range of, 25th, 30th best starter at safety. And I think he's fine. I think he's an upgrade to what the Bengals had. And I think he should be out there as a starter. But again, just kind of more average at everything. So I think those two, my two safety candidates, because I couldn't pick one. I think if I had to do one, it would be Cook. But yeah, those are my two safeties for the all-average team.
I liked Cook a good bit. That was a good one. I think that was a really good pick. And spoiler alert, I was originally going to have safety. And that's not spoilers, stupid idiot. Peel back the curtain here for a second. Very transparent guy. I was supposed to have safeties, and I was like, Nate, you're better at the safeties than I am. Like, you just got to put your finger on the pulse of this position better. So I liked your Brian Cook one. That was a good nomination to me.
Yeah, and again, it's not a total. It's kind of nice that even on our graphic right now, him and Otten are next to each other, because it's like the same discussion. It's like, you're fine with this guy starting for you. You want better, but you're fine with it. And yeah, that's kind of perfect with these two. All right, let's move on down to linebacker. And this is the position you traded. So who'd you end up with as your all average linebacker?
Yeah, I went with Nate Landman of the Los Angeles Rams, which I think is like just what they're shooting for. Like, oh yeah, can we get on average? Because we're never going to invest very much in this position in this defense. It's just not part of what they do. And I, for a second, and I wrote this on the doc because I hesitated. I was like, is this too disrespectful? I wanted to get your opinion on if this was too disrespectful to call him an average starter. But I think the only reason that I even hesitated on that is because I can hear, and I love these two guys, they're my favorite booth right now, but I can hear friggin' Joe Buck and Troy Aikman talking about Landman. find like all the, like, it's like, oh, there's Landman again. And then they get talking about the show. I'm like, are they doing an ad for Paramount Plus right now on ESPN? I mean, what's going on here? I know all the media companies are, you know, interchangeable these days, a lot going on there, but I mean, what's up with the Landman ad on Monday Night Football? But anyways, yeah. So I think that was maybe the only reason I thought it might be too disrespectful, but otherwise I'm like, yeah, solid tackler, you know, coverage up and down. Obviously, that's going to be like any average linebacker, I think, is going to be up and down in coverage. Yep. But he can give you something in your blitz like game and some of your simulated stuff as well. So yeah, I liked Landman as average starting linebacker to me, and I think they're kind of paying him to be that type of player.
I think this is good because a linebacker, I'm kind of harsh on. I'm like, I'm very much the Netflix rating. Like, it's like, you're good or you're bad to me. Like, there's not a lot of average to me. So, like, I'm actually kind of glad you went. I think Layman's a great candidate for this. Like, because there's others, you know, like a guy like Aluakon, he's much better than this from the Jags. But even if I consider him not great, but he's better than average if you look at the landscape of the linebacker position. There's an influx of guys that just came in, young guys. And even other guys I would even nominate for this. Like I think he's better than Justin Strand. And, like, you know, the guys like that. N'Kobe Dean. I think this is the same tier. Dean has had flashes, but he can't stay on the field, so it's kind of even hard to consider him.
I think Dean's Dean's flashes have been higher than Landman's, but Landman's been like more of a metronome at this position. Yep. And that's, again, why linebackers is difficult, because it's not as big of a variance position at corner, but I think when you can get these like metronome guys that, like, yeah, they're going to give you bad moments, but for the most part, you're getting on the, you're in the fairway, you're getting, you know, you're getting on base, like, that's fine. I think that's kind of the other guy I went with, who I think is probably not good enough for this, or is just in the back of my mind, was another, ironically, former Rams linebacker, I think is Christian Roseboom, where, like, he's a little bit more variancy, and obviously he's on the Bucks roster now, but he's another one that I just think, like, all right, there's really good moments here from Roseboom, and then it's like, oh, oof, that's missed assignment, like a lot of those check boxes there for him. So I think he's probably a little below average, but he was the other guy that was kind of my backup answer besides Landman.
I think Landman's a great answer, especially looking at starters. Yeah, and how they use him, it's like perfect. It was how he got used in Atlanta, where he's really good on the simulate stuff. Like you mentioned, the creepers and simulates. Yeah. He's like a good little pass rusher too. And the thing I always remember with Nate Landman is that his sister is named Ocean. And I still think that's the funniest thing, that her name is Ocean Landman.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. No, and I only know this factoid
because when he first started for the Falcons, I was like, who the hell is this Nate Landman guy? And I was looking at his like bio and stuff. It's like, your sister's name Ocean Landman. Julia.
That's
Gullia?
Really funny. That's so funny, because my my sister really wanted to name my niece Ocean, and this obviously she's like 3 years old now, and I was like, dude, come on, you can't name Ocean. Nobody's name is Ocean. So to come to find out, Nate Landman's sister is named Ocean. That's pretty
Ocean
funny.
Ocean Landman.
Yeah.
I've never heard of another Ocean.
Never met another. And I was like, come on, Ocean. What? And listen, I realize my name is Matt. We've gotten more than enough already with Matts. I mean, please, like, that terrible name. But yeah, Ocean. I didn't know there was anybody actually named Ocean. So maybe, and now I feel a little bit bad that I gave my sister so much hell for that. But I think they landed on a better name.
I know, it just cracks me up because it's Nate, good name, Nate, Ty, great name, Brandon, and Ocean. I don't know. Ocean. That's what his family's name. Yeah, Ocean.
Yeah, just Nate, like, just she middle swam, of the she, road she dude swam. Names, and then, no offense, middle of the road dude names, and then Ocean. They went off the board on that one. Love that.
Have I told you my story with my family, my parents? They have like this really sweet story. My sister's name is Adrian. My parents' first date was Rocky. So that was nice. That was their first date. Nice, right? And then my dad wanted to name me Paulie. My mom's like, no, we're not naming him Paulie Tice, you know, the brother of Adrian. And then they were walking down the street, and then they saw Nathan's Hot Dogs. I'm like, that's a nice name, Nathan.
There you go.
So I'm technically Nathan. Named after Nathan's Hot Dogs, because that just sparked the light bulb. So Rocky, first date, great story. Drunken, walking through a city and getting a light bulb, turning on a name, Nathan's Hot Dogs.
Hot dogs are great. Listen, people like hot dogs. People like Rocky, people like hot dogs. I know. And you know what? People like the ocean too. So there you go.
They do. They do. And they like the land, man. All right, let's get to defensive tackle. See, I cheated here because I couldn't really come up with a good one. And I wanted to talk about this guy because he's actually might be better than average. And he would probably be on my breakout player list. So I'll probably talk about him sometime in the last month before the show comes out. And that's Jonah Lealu from the Raiders. Who is Jonah Lealu? He is a defensive tackle for the Raiders. The Colts drafted him, I believe, and he got cut as a camp cut. And then ever since the Raiders swooped him up, he's actually been decent. Like, this is like a starter and like a solid starter who actually maybe has a little bit more. And I have just kind of kept an eye on him as I watched the Raiders' tragicness over the last few years. But he's like, you know, if you watch Max Crosby, you're going to notice Lealu as well. But no, can be disruptive. He's got some beef to him. He can stay on the field and pass rush downs. And again, he actually might be better in this. I actually might be underrating him by calling him average, because again, I might would consider him as a breakout player. But I just want to talk about Jonah Lealu a bit, because if you're watching the Raiders this year, they're a little bit more relevant. Just keep an eye on him, because he actually has got some stuff to him, number 96, and can kind of do some nice things against the run and the pass and stay on the field all three downs. So wanted to give Lealu a shout there. Jonah Lealu. I'm trying to just even go like average D tackle. Like DJ Reader's better than that. He's better than the average. Yeah, maybe that's hard. Just me in my head. It's hard. Like, now a guy like Grady Jarrett might be below average. Like, maybe his teammate Dexter, I actually consider him more slightly above average. So it's like, it was hard for me, maybe my own grading, to like just go, this guy's average. And even Lealu, I think, is actually better than the average. So this is just kind of who I, like, even a guy like Bobby Brown, I think he's better than average. Yeah, but just kind of going team by team, I was just really trying to find a guy, and I kind of settled on him, and maybe it's just an excuse to talk about him a little more. But curious if you like any other names guys came to mind.
I was going to say, I feel like there's certain guys who have been better and then have kind of settled into average-ish roles. Like,
yeah,
I think like Javon Hargrave has maybe been a guy that was really above average and now is like, he's average, you know? Like, if
like we could do worse. Flash plays, but overall, he's average, you know, if you just looked at like his overall play.
Defensive tackle, I feel like maybe we've said this about every position, so maybe this is like not a revelatory thing to say at this point, but I feel like defensive tackle, there's guys where it's like, yeah, he's going to give you like flash plays and then just kind of forgettable the rest of it. Or is it the guy that you just want to be average, you just want like 5 out of 10 on every single snap, you know? Like,
yeah,
or what type, like, what, is it 5 out of 10 on every single snap, or is it 5 out of 10 in the aggregate? And then like, some guys, it's gonna be a lot of twos, but we got some 9 snaps, and in the aggregate somewhere it's a five. So I think that's difficult with DTs in particular. In addition to like all the guys I would have considered for this, I thought would break my rule of I didn't want to pick anybody that was like on their first or second year, kind of on their rookie contracts. I think there's a lot of guys that fit there, but I, you know, want to leave some room for improvement on that one.
Again, I think he's the candidate that's like, I'm kind of doing him a disservice by calling him average, because I think the arrow is pointing up where he is going to be more of an above average to even good. I would even consider, I'll go on a limb and say he actually ends up having a good year. So maybe just at this point in time, we're recording this on June 2026, that we, then before this comes out, that maybe you just get out ahead on that breakout. But all right, let's round it out. Defensive end, edges, Matt, who's the name you came up with here?
Yeah, another super difficult one necessarily, but yeah, I ended up going with hard. Jacob Martin was with Washington last year. He is with Tennessee Titans Robert Saleh this year. He's another guy who's just like, get him in the rotation. Like, we need someone in here, a little pop. Let's get us some Jacob Martin here. You know, he played a lot in Washington the last year, and I thought he did some nice stuff for them. So like, again, is there a lot of upside necessarily with him? I don't think so, but he's a good player to have out on the edge that, you know, to me personally, I certainly think is more of like a rush, obviously just a rush body. And that was where I kind of wanted to go for in this one.
I think that's, again, that gets in the conversation we just had. Like, are you going for on base percentage, or are you going for slugging and hitting home runs once out of 5 at bats, you know, once out of 10 at bats, you know, that is kind of what you're kind of parsing through here. God, I actually kind of came up with a better name for maybe my defensive tackle answer. David Onyemata. That probably would have been a better one. No, I want Jonah Lealu. I want to talk about him.
Get him on the ground.
No, I thought this was good, Martin. I even going through lists, I kind of came down to some DPR types, and I couldn't really pull the trigger. Like, I'm glad I didn't have this position, because it would have taken forever for me to kind of go like, oh, maybe this guy. Well, maybe this guy because he can rush the passer. Or maybe this guy, he holds up great on the edge. So I'm kind of glad you just skimmed the fat and went with a DPR and just got through it. So that Titans, I don't know, that Titans D-line, they got a lot of good. When they can just drop in role players now. They got a lot of good up there.
That's what I think he's ideal in that situation where it's a lot of guys. Yes. You can just kind of throw at the problem and he's going to be someone that can eat some, not eat some snaps for you sounds disrespectful, but like, yeah, he's going to give you some good reps.
Yes. I think that's good. I think maybe other one, maybe I'll throw out here. God, but it's going to, now your kind of philosophy is getting in my head. The guy could ascend. Tavius Robinson from the Ravens might have been another one, but he might ascend this year. So I don't want to kind of do him a disservice and nominate here, but Matt, I thought you did a phenomenal job and I really liked our all average team. So to recap the 2026 Football 301 all average team, we got Jacoby Brissett at quarterback, Jalen Naylor as the primary receiver, we'll call it, Kate Otten at tight end, Chris Rodriguez, Osiris Torrance, amongst others, Tyler Steen at guard, Rasheed Walker, I'm sorry, at tackle, Cade Mays at center, could have got about 20 guys there, Brandon Stevens at corner, Brian Cook at safety, or Andre Sisco, Nate Landman at linebacker, Jonah Lealu or David Onyemata at defensive tackle, and then Jacob Martin at D end and edge. Matt, that was awesome. Thank you for hopping in the time machine with me. As again, we recorded this at some point in June, and this will be most likely on your feeds and somewhere in July, and I should be on vacation, should be, because who knows, because I things just keep changing for me, so hopefully I'm on vacation at this point in time. Who knows, might have a little disclaimer at adamendum on this, but thank you, Matt, so much for joining me. Hope you're about to enjoy your vacation, which you're about to take after we record this, so thank you again for joining me, buddy, but we're closing out today. We'll be back every Tuesday throughout this offseason, and then probably by the time you're listening to this, we got training camp rolling up. That last week of July, we'll get back to two shows a week, starting with top 10 offenses, top 10 defenses, division previews. Kind of my favorite part of the season to do those shows. It's great once we get back to 2 a week. So make sure to be looking out for that. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. That's Matt Harmon. You can find him at Matt_BYB. Subscribe to us, follow us, rate us 5 stars wherever you get your podcast. Watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Make sure to like and subscribe there as well. Reply, comment, all that good stuff. Yell at us, compliment us, everything in between. Dude, just say something. I mean, I appreciate it. But thank you to everyone behind the scenes. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next time.